Just quickly, I would like to thank the organizer of the event and the host for really an amazing time here. It's been really quite impressive to see all the presentations so far. So thank you very much to them. So I'm going to try to do it quite quickly because you've been going through a lot of presentation this morning. So now we're going to basically zoom inside these evil fences. There are the schools. Now, before talking about the kind of work that we're doing at the Pietwart Institute and the Willem de Koning Academy, I just want to make a quick overview of this problematic world that is open source. So very quickly, 1986, you have Richard Stallman, who is basically doing his Stallman thing in his lab. And they get, the legend says that they get a new printer, and then the printer, the driver, he wants to hack the driver to do something, but that he cannot do it, so he gets very, very upset. And then, because of that, the rest is history, is the foundation, the creation of the Free Software Foundation and the GPL license. So in 91, Linus Torvald thinks it's a quite interesting project, so he decides to use this this license for the Linux kernel, and then we know what happens next. 98, someone else that is a bit in the dark, which is Eric Raymond, has write a book that tried to explain the ecosystem of free software production. And this is quite inspiring for Netscape, who think that it could be some sort of exit strategy for their browser. And Raymond, looking at how Netscape is using open source in commercial practices, well, free software in commercial practices, decides with a few other people to not fork, but kind of branch the free software movement into the open source initiative. And open source, the intention, of course, was to be attractive, more attractive to business people, but at the same time to clarify this sort of confusion around the problematic words such as free and freedom. And the consequence of that is that suddenly this project and this intention, this way of working, becomes more attractive to other fields. So in 1999, you have, for instance, the first example of first steps towards a clearer articulation of open source hardware with the early open source core CPU project. 99, you also have something that starts to be more diffusion into other cultural fields, such as the architecture. So in 99 already, people are starting to talk about open source architecture. And then beyond that, in 2001, you have Lawrence Lessig, who also gets very, very upset, like Stallman, because he's looking at the internet and he's seeing this sort of what he kind of called this sort of Sovietization, potential Sovietization of the network. His fear is the media industry will start to lock down the resources and the way people are sharing online. And he thinks his mission is to provide a constitution for the cyberspace, and this is done through the project Creative Commons. At the same time, Wikipedia is coming in, and they choose a free software license for their project. Later on, they will switch to a Creative Commons license. And 2001 is also the project Free Beer, because these things are getting more and more popular. So artists think to say, oh, it's quite funny, this open source stuff. So they make a Free Beer project to try to communicate on this issue. And it's also the birth of the Free Art license. And then things are getting even more confusing with 2003, the birth of the open source yoga movement. So the open source yoga movement is basically a response towards an attempt from some yogi in the USA to patent some asanas, so some yoga positions, and to trademark them. And this is interesting because this movement is trying to make a link between open source and public domain, which is not quite exactly this, but this is a very good case of interpretation of open source in a broad mainstream context. But this even goes further with 2003, the birth of open source Judaism that was hinted by Douglas Rushkoff in the conferences to try to explain how religions could benefit from open source. But it's also the birth of the Open Educational Resources, which is a sort of collection of documents that universities and academia try to share and put online so other people can reuse their course curriculum. 2004, open government, same stories. So we're interested in open source, but we understand it through the transparency approach. So we think that it could be good for government. And 2005, Adrian Boy is challenging the economy by trying to create basically some sort of physical fork bomb by creating a machine that would eventually print itself, which is the RepRap project. It starts to get quite messy, so a few people start to get together and try to understand how this whole open source system is working, which is quite difficult. So 2006 is the Open Knowledge Foundation is created to try to clarify some of these definitions and some of these licenses in a more broader cultural context. It's also the similar project is the Freedom Defined project that attempts to clarify what is really free in Creative Commons licenses and other free and open source licenses or permissive licenses. And 2006, of course, is also the first LGM event. 2007, you have the Open Handset Alliance, which is Google's own approach to open source. So it's a kind of second approach towards how to integrate open source in a commercial context. 2010, you have open source fashion, but you also have open source jihad, which is a sort of sub-branch of Al-Qaeda, who basically have been trying to rebrand the anarchist cookbook under this open source jihad that is found in several underground fanzines. It's also the birth of the open web, which tried to borrow some of the openness of the open source mess into the internet through the promotion of open standards. 2012, it's also now the creation of the Open Data Institute in London. So now we're moving into again further away from the original free software and open source intent towards more. Okay, how should we license and how should we access large data sets? It's also the year where Defense Distributed is created. So basically, with the combination of open source technology and 3D printing, some people are interested into printing their own firearms. And it's also how they got kicked out from Thingiverse and then created the DefCAD project. And now, finally, 2013, the Willem de Kooning Academy decides to do something about open source. So looking quickly at all this history, we can be a bit worried, because how now do artists and designers within a context of education are going to interpret these questions? What kind of new things are they going to invent to again reclaim the word open source one more time? Well, as it goes, this particular project concerns the bachelors. But in the true spirit of open source, we're not going to start from scratch. And in that sense, we have a very good code base to start working with, which is the Pitsvart Institute. So the Pitsvart Institute is the master program of the Willem de Kooning Academy, and it happens that we've been quite interested in the question of free software and free culture for quite some time already. More particularly, the way the course is articulated is done through Wiki, free, lib, and open source software, quite important aspect to given to research, and generally a do-it-yourself, do-it-with-other ethos. So the wiki basically is quite central to the course. This is where we put all the thing. It's not so much, is barely no moderation on the wiki, which happens that sometimes you have some wiki wars going on between the students. It's quite nice. And we put everything on the wiki. It's not a secret wiki, it's public. You can go there, you can even create an account. The presence of free software is for the network media branch of the Media Design Master is very important, as we start usually right away, almost right away, with an install party, which allows right since the beginning to try to give the students some sort of mapping of what is free culture by understanding the relationship between Debian, Ubuntu, and other distribution, and letting them decide what they want to try out. It's also the context that is quite interesting. So we are teaching also version control tools, for instance, as part of a lot of software that is being taught in the course, but we try to provide some cultural context to it, because ultimately we don't want to make super fancy makers and designers who just make stuff for the sake of making stuff, and they make it open for the sake of making it open. We want to use Free culture and free software as really a conceptual and technical tool to understand how technology and cultures are working today. And this is why the research aspect and the critical studies influence in the Pittsburgh Institute is very important. Some of our students are using the wiki to dump some ideas for their thesis. And also, in terms of growing knowledge, the wiki has become a place where you can find quite a lot of information, bits of code and how-tos and tutorials that are contributed both by the staff and by the students on the same exact level. So the point here is basically how we can connect this thing that was specific to the Pittsburgh Institute, but to also make the whole Willem de Kooning Academy bachelors benefit from this specific approach that has been going on for nearly a decade. Well, first of all, we've been starting to use a wiki as a first step between us to just work together. And this, for instance, this page is a resources that we're starting to write about what kind of workflows we could figure out for designing lectures, and this is growing slowly, and eventually the wiki is going to be open up to other staff and other teachers and the students of the academy as the program is getting developed. The program will be launched officially in 2013, the next academic year. But in the spirit of release early and release often, we are already implementing some aspect of it in the current program. So for instance, in Amsterdam, December 2013, there are going to be an event on the topic of free culture. And the current bachelor graphics students of the Willem de Kooning Academy are working on this event, where they are being asked to develop an identity for this event, to think about how to develop the communication strategies. And this is going to be done at several levels, including how to use free software to develop this visual and this communication, and how to map free culture and communicate it to a broader audience. If we start to zoom in into the new curriculum that will start next academic year, we have isolated three elements, which is open design, data design, and digital craft. The way it's going to work, very briefly, is this: when the students are going to come in their first year of a 4 year bachelor education, they're going to choose a certain type of practice, for instance, graphic design. And then, year after year, they're going to get increasingly specialized in a specific domain. So, for instance, someone who decides to be a fashion designer could get a specialization in open design. A graphic design student could get a specialization in data design. So this is going to be extremely important, and the last year of the bachelor's is really going to develop a project specific to these specializations. 5 minutes, thank you.
Hello, my name is Diana. I'm the coordinator of the Slippery Field Open Design at the Academy. What we're trying to do is to investigate and explore what open design could mean for our curriculum. And we specifically focus on physical products, or product design, or even other kinds of products. And as another focus point, we would like to pay more attention to the whole idea of design sharing, sharing products, and sharing also processes online, of course, in order to let users make them relevant for themselves. And another topic we're focusing on is digital fabrication. Of course, open design, as I said, is a slippery field, and it also raises a few questions based on, for art education, for the Willem de Kooning, two important paradigms, actually. One is, of course, ownership. And within that field, we are collaborating. We have a collaboration with Creative Commons, the Netherlands, and we are sort of like co-developing specific scenarios for designers, how could they apply Creative Commons licenses and how and why. Another, and that is of course for us the most important question, is concerns authorship, and then specifically artistic authorship. does there exist anything like open authorship, or how could it be applied to our program? So to be a bit more concrete, some educational goals of our program include exploring the aesthetics and poetics of open design for the field of designing and art. The other one includes investigating, analyzing, and working with more new or older method approaches of open design, and of course what it means to share design and your design knowledge and your product, and on a more pragmatic level working with digital fabrication. So quickly I'll explain to you one example of our program as of next year. One project is called Opening Up, the Origins of Things, and departs from the idea actually that of course we are all alienated from products by mass industry and mass production. So the idea is that students go to a scrapyard, find products, take them apart, make them, repair them, hack them, make their own new parts by digital fabrication, and tell a new story about this product with their new design, more or less. The goals for the educational goals are that students learn to reappropriate and personalize and make accessible and shareable by users, and also to learn about alternative mass production means. So we will visit scrapyards, fab labs, hackerspaces, and also traditional conventional factories. Some possible outcomes we hope to expect are, personal improvements of the product, a Frankenstein fridge, for instance, or even a data visualization of the origins of this product that has been made new.
Hi, everyone. My name is Altje van Meer. I'm coordinator of CrossLab within the Willem de Koning, which is busy with education around digital media for years now, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about two other programs we are developing. One of them is data design, and so I'm going to be really short because we don't have enough time. But data design is data are everywhere now and becoming the material for design, actually. Within this program, we want to focus on how to design for dynamic data. So the amount of data explodes, and continuously mobile media collect our data. So mobile phones with software logs, cameras, microphones, RFID, tags, wireless networks, social networks, etc. In addition to our own social data and the data which is generated by the media and everyone else, governments and local authorities are also opening up their data. So I'm referring here to open data. So you could say we live in a data-dense world. So we think there is a need now for designers who can shape and give meaning to this endless flow of data. And so numbers, stats, and figures tell us little. But when you see them visualized in an attractive and compelling way, the data comes alive and starts making sense to us. So data design focuses on finding meaning and stories in large amounts of data, and then translating these stories into a meaningful visual or experience which communicates to an audience. So, we go to digital crafts. So this is another learning trajectory within the Willem de Koning. So digital craft is about crafts and about new tools and technologies. New technologies such as 3D printing or laser cutting have changed crafts and design, but especially the process of making has changed. So we make things different now. So digital craft is about change and how we shape our tools. In an era where digital production technologies are commonplace, the craftsman is now often romanticized and is seen as a person who works in a workshop with wood and metal. However, the relationship between technology and craft has always been there. And so the pencil, pen, the kiln, and the loom sit alongside the computer, the laser cutter and the 3D printer. So all belong to a list of media technologies, which were all at one point considered new. So craft relies on one's skill to leverage these tools in order to push and form a material. And next to that, it implies that one can take ownership or master their own work process. So digital craft is concerned with the appropriation of digital media technologies. And appropriation is about learning the tools and retooling them. So retooling means to adapt, alter, and make them more suitable to their specific use and making progress. I know I have to quit, which is really a pity because I wanted to actually tell a bit of more examples we are actually developing within the education. But so when you're interested, maybe you should come to our workshop. Mm-hmm. And then we can tell a bit more about the program we're actually developing and becomes a bit more concrete.
Yeah, I'm going to try to wrap up in 1.5 minutes. So basically, we there is this what has been presented by Altieu and Dina, but there is a core aspect also to all these courses, which is around the free culture, the ideas of free culture, authorship, web, digital literacy, and participation, which all comes with strings attached, but that's the point of trying to engage the students with them. And we're not going to do that alone. It's getting harder and harder to read, that's the point. We have built a sort of network of partners, which is growing, so we can do this not just in-house, but with other people. So Creative Commons in the Netherlands was mentioned, but we also have Rhizome for data design. And one that is quite important is Mozilla, because Mozilla is going, which is going to be the first time the WebMakers project is going to be partner of the course, and they're going to give us feedback on the curriculum. We're going to use the WebMakers tool, and that also means that our course will be under a free culture license. So we're going to have a mix of GPL, CC BY-SA, and CC0 for everything that is going to be produced within the course and will be put online on the wiki. So in the end, something that is quite important for us is that it looks like a mess and very focused on the academy, but in fact, we just want to be some sort of a node. And you want to see it again? Thank you. So, thank you. Yeah, years of training. So, so that's the point, to be a node. So node implies that there is a network, and that's why we're trying to do this sort of meeting at 2:30-ish. Today, really to try to build towards a network of free culture aware educators in art and design and really figure out if there is really here enough people and willing to try to do this thing together so we can be part of a broader environment. Thank you.
Thank you very much.